So welcome to Post Carbon Radio. My co-host today is my wife, Eleanor Despina, who graciously offered to step in for my usual co-host, Karin Nyhus, who is taking a break today. Thank you for joining me today on Post Carbon Radio, Eleanor.
Thank you, Bing, for having me.
And our show today is about the 2017 Geography of Hope Conference. Ancestors and the Land, Our Past, Present, and Future, which will take place this coming weekend on March 17th, 18th, and 19th in Point Reyes Station, part of the traditional homelands of the Coast Miwok Indians.
Our guest today in the studio is Steve Costa, founder of the Geography of Hope Conference. Steve is a co-founder of Black Mountain Circle, which is a co-sponsor of the conference. Welcome to Post Carbon, Steve.
It's great to be here with both of you.
And on the telephone is Laurette Savoie, and I think you're in South Hadley, Massachusetts. Is that correct, Laurette?
A few miles north in Leverett, a little bit closer to New Hampshire.
Okay, and you're a professor of environmental studies and geology at Mount Holyoke College. So welcome, Post Carbon Radio, Laurette.
Thank you so much. I'm very glad to be with you.
It's great to hear your voice, Laurette.
Oh, it's great to hear yours too, Steve.
Laurette holds somewhat of a record in that she's only one of three people that have been presenters at Geography of Hope conferences. The others were Bob Haz and Brenda Hillman. So we're looking forward to seeing you on Thursday.
Yes.
Well, looking forward to joining you.
Shall I mention Wendy now, Bing?
Yeah.
Later in the show, we'll also be talking with Wendy Johnson in Muir Beach. Wendy is a meditation teacher and author of Gardening at the Dragon's Gate. Both Laurette and Wendy are alumni of Mesa Writers Refuge. So let's start with Steve. Tell us about the conference, and we're curious to hear how you came to start the series of Geography of Hope conferences, which are now how many?
This is going to be the sixth conference. As you mentioned in part of your introduction, it's being presented by Black Mountain Circle, which is the nonprofit that Kate and I created about 3 years ago. We've been offering programs and authors and retreats on the theme of the interconnection between spirit, story, and place. And so this conference in particular really sort of fits with that theme. The first Geography of Hope conference took place back in 2008. One of the most beloved local authors, Philip Fracken, had written a biography of Wallace Stegner, who was a writer, environmentalist, and professor, was head of the Stanford Creative Writing Program back in the 70s and 80s. And the conference takes its name from Stegner's description of wild landscapes as part of our, quote, geography of hope. And in he mentions this geography of hope in his now famous letter to Congress, which helped pass the Wilderness Act of 1964. And it's a nice reminder that writers and environmentalists can, in fact, have a major impact on key legislation, and Stegner was at that. The Geography of Hope has now become one of the more exceptional literary gatherings in Northern California, and we bring together writers and activists. We have 3 days of field trips. The conference starts on Friday with about 14 field trips in the local Geography of Hope, and many local ancestors who have been connected to local landscapes will be leading those tours and telling stories. And this year's theme is inspired in part by the words of Winona LaDuc, who is one of this year's presenters and who many know as this internationally renowned Native American Indian activist. And there's this wonderful quote that in part inspired us when we read it. She said, "I'd like to be a person my ancestors are proud of, and I'd like to be a person that my descendants thank. I think most of us would." So we think that this conference is pretty timely in that as Native people here in West Marin and throughout the world have taught us, we can best care for the land by knowing its history, its cherishing its stories, and by actively working to protect it. And so that's what we're hoping to achieve by looking both at our ancestors' past, present, and future.
Sounds great. And I'll never forget the conference 2 years ago, which I've told everyone was really the best conference I've ever been to.
On women in the land.
That's right. Yes. It was fantastic. Who are some of the other co-sponsors, Steve?
The other co-sponsors are Point Reyes Books. That's where this all really began back in 2008, and with the support of Philip Fratkin, who was able to bring together these very noted writers and students of Wallace Stegner at that conference. The Center for Humans and Nature and the U.S. Forest Service, both of whom have co-sponsored the last three conferences here in Point Reyes Station.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Now let's bring in Laurette Savoy. Laurette is one of many presenters at the Geography of Hope Conference. And her latest book, Trace, Memory, History, Race, and the American Landscape, won the 2016 American Book Award. It was also a finalist for the Penn America Open Book Award, among other honors. Congratulations, Laurette.
Well, and, thank you very much.
Laurette has been a presenter at three Geography of Hope conferences. She makes unique and thoughtful connections between people, land, culture, and race. Laurette will be on the Saturday morning panel called Catching Up with the Past with Celia Rodriguez, Brooke Williams, and Melissa Nelson moderating. Laurette, can you tell us a little bit about what this panel will cover?
The panel will touch on really the sense of the past as it touches the present. And I think one of the things that we are going to do is to try to tell our own stories, our own ancestral narratives, but very much tie them into how they impact our relationships with the land and with each other today, as setting a stage then for the next group, which will be talking or considering the present, and then we will move on to the future in what kind of ancestors we would like to be. And so I'm just really thrilled to be part of the conference because, as you said, it's the third one. The first one I attended in 2013 considered the impact of Alda Leopold, and then in 2015, Women and the Land. And this seems to be just a continuation, not so much of a conversation, but of a crucible of ideas and passions come together so that we can really not just reflect on our lives right here, this moment, but what has impacted our lives from the past, who, what narratives, what ancestors, what we've learned, but also how we then can take that to what we do now and toward the future. And I think that the whole gathering promises to be one almost as vital as breath, as breathing.
Hi, Wendy. Welcome
Thank
to Post Carbon Radio, and we're so glad you're here.
I'm glad to be with you.
And Steve is with us as well.
Hi, Wendy.
Good afternoon.
So you've been in every Geography of Hope going back to 2008. Tell us what's going to be special about this year's conference.
The Geography of Hope have been in me.
Tell us what you think will be really special about this year's conference.
I think that for me, I calibrate the spring equinox means Geography of Hope. So I feel like just being together in Point Reyes, the confluence of being in community, being with incredible teachers and learners, brand new people to the topic, and then the people that are those who are well seasoned in the dialogue of literature and geography and ancestral lineage, all the best of events. And I've just always learned so much and appreciate the opportunity to be together for these precious 3 days. And I love that we'll be walking the land together, then settling in and really listening to each other, learning together, and then closing by connecting back to the landscape of the geography of hope. Just, it's, you know, and I think especially this year, I'm particularly grateful, given what a rough year it's been for so many of us.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So I know that you are the facilitating the Sunday morning panel. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it's, you know, I think the Sunday morning panel is, for me, every event at Geography of Hope is contingent on everything else that happens. So Sunday, you know, after we've been together for a few days, we really have a chance to listen to usually local people or artists who've not really had an opportunity to speak and share their work as fully as can happen on Sunday. So I think by Sunday we're well endowed with familiarity with each other and just the opportunity to deeply and thoroughly listen to those who know their work so well. And we have an incredible panel this Sunday of public servants, ancestral teachers, activists, artists. It should be a lot of fun. People should come well rested because they're going to get worked up.
And there's just a beautiful show at Toby's Gallery right now that I believe there may be some people on the panel who have work in that show.
Yeah, I don't know that, but I wouldn't be surprised at all. And that's one of the wonderful things about the Sunday panel is that we're just pulling citizens from all different walks of life and experience coming together to just deeply immerse in the final morning together. So it's a kind of church, going to Sunday services together.
That's so nice. Yes,
yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So Bing has some notes here, and he's trying to get Lorette back on the phone, and I'm going to try to kind of decipher this.
All righty.
We have here a question. Tell us about DNA, our DNA and the DNA of the land.
Bing and I had a lively conversation. I spoke to Bing. So let's go to DNA. It's in our DNA to remember who we are and where we come from and what we're made of. So this past Friday at CIIS, we had a full-day conference or summit on religion and ecology. And I thought one of the most powerful teachers was a Native American teacher, Karina Gould, from the Sagora Ray. Sagora Te Land,
yes.
Trust, or it's an urban indigenous, yeah, women's-led land trust in the East Bay. And Karina reminded us that knowing who we are and where we come from is in our DNA.
We'll
played with that. Here we go. Of course it's in our DNA.
Hold on.
I shouldn't say of course, because it takes a lifetime to remember that. But yes, it's in our DNA, in the double helix of who we are, but also it's in the D for descendants and the ancestors.
Yeah.
Ancestors. So I love that play. I thought it was, you know, very lively and appropriate. And she proceeded to unravel, unspool what it means to be a person living or settling in the Bay Area and remembering the ancestral knowledge of place. She's been so involved in protecting and unearthing and celebrating the shell mounds that ring, more than 400 shell mounds that ring the greater San Francisco Bay. So it was wonderful to hear from her and to be reminded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Back on the lines, Lorette Savoy.
I'm here.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we had a little difficulty. Anyway, I think we left off. I was asking you about your book, Trace, Memory, History, Race in the American Landscape. You write about the shadow stories of people who have been or continue to be ignored by history. Can you tell us more about what you mean?
But the shadow stories can be defined in many different ways, but often, or in the case of what I was considering, they're the stories of those whose lives and experiences are often not recognized or voiced in history or public narratives, yet the very presence of these people was quite significant to society, to history, and of course to the generations of descendants who followed them. And in my case, many ancestral paths converge in me, paths of free and enslaved Africans, of colonists from Europe, and of people indigenous to this land. Yet those paths were largely eroded across generations by many things, by losses of language and voice, by human displacements that were caused by dispossession from homeland, as well as forced servitude in slavery, also caused by dimensions of lives that often are compressed and deflated by ignorance, stereotype, and assumptions. And certainly, the paths were eroded by dismembering public narratives of public history of who the we the people are to each other and to this land. And so what I try to do in Trace is to literally trace the fragmented narratives, the gaps, not just only of my family, but narratives of human relationships with the land that often are not known, and to piece them together in a mosaic that gives us a sense of how we the people, have lived on this land through time and how much we have always been in relationship, whether admitted or not. And the journeys go from the San Andreas Fault Zone to a South Carolina plantation, from an island in Lake Superior, that's Anishinaabe territory, to black towns in Oklahoma, Indian territory there, but also to the origins of names that the American land wears, as well as to the origin of the border along Mexico and the United States, and to the origin of the nation's capital. In all of these, it's understanding how the past lives in the present, and how ancestors, our own ancestors by blood, but also the ancestral stories and memories that have fed us over generations still impact us today.
Wow.
Lorette, can you describe how some of the ancestral narratives of your own family have formed you?
Well, there are many ways to answer that, and maybe if I could just try it in a couple of ways, and ways that people might not think about, because I think this was part of the revelation for me, or the discovery for me as I was working on the book. I am of a family of multiracial heritage, yet my parents and elders were silent about our past, and so from childhood, I would say one formative narrative, if I may call it that, was silence. And you can think of silence as being a sanctuary and as it being a frame that can hold stories, but silence can often hide or obscure origins.
Yes.
And for me, the unvoiced lives of so many ancestors cut such a sharp absence that I had to fill that gap. I had to fill what was missing, because all of those generations of bloodlines mattered in making me. And so as an adult, I've sought the fragments and the pieces left behind of their lives to understand a little bit more. And what I gathered, or what I learned, is that I descend from Africans who did come in chains from Africa, but also Africans who never knew bondage, even in the colonial era. Mm-hmm. And I also descend from English and Irish and other European colonists who tried to make a new start in a world that was new to them. And I come from Native peoples who were displaced by those colonists from Eastern homelands along the Chesapeake, homelands that had defined their essential being. And so what I've come to understand is that my forebears likely navigated a very tangled melange of land relations, of inclusion and exclusion, of ownership and tenancy, of investment as well as dispossession. And so while some new land quite intimately is home for generations, if not millennia, others had to work it as enslaved laborers for its yield. And so trying to come to terms with all of that, as well as with ancestors who owned the land and who pushed people and dared to own people, and tried to understand or navigate the very, very complicated strands of relationships that they all bring together, that's what the ancestral past means to me.
What was your process for discovering all of this, and how was it for you emotionally?
Emotionally, it's easier to begin with that. I wrote or began to write one, two, three, four, five, six, all the way up to 9 different drafts that I then discarded or put away because it was hard. I always thought that my parents' muteness meant that that generational history should no longer be part of life or living memory, or that a past that was survived was better left unexposed or forgotten as a form of self-defense. But I finally realized that I would remain very groundless or homeless without understanding those relationships. And how I came to find them, everything from the National Archives, the local county courthouses, digging up manumission papers, deeds, land ownership records. What I did not have, of course, was the oral story. And so I had to fill in the gaps from the documentary records. And I found a lot, including freedom papers that some ancestors had to carry with them as early as the 18th century to prove that they were people of color who were free. Because if they did not carry them around like them, as we would carry a driver's license, they could be picked up and captured and enslaved, even though they were born free.
Sort of like immigrants today.
Exactly. And that is one of the take-home messages, not only from the book, but from my work, is that our relationships to each other in terms of the role of power to define who is included and who is excluded has played out in many ways throughout the nation's history and even before the nation. And it's very important to understand today in terms of connecting our ancestral past to our present and to a future that we want to have.
Well, this is Bing, and we're listening to Laurette Savoy, who's going to be a presenter at the Geography of Hope Conference this weekend. Right here in the studio and on the radio, we all come from different parts of the planet, from different bioregions and different watersheds that our ancestors probably knew intimately, where we had deep roots. But now that we're in America, being all immigrants, unless you're indigenous, with our diversity and the mobility we have and the fast pace of technology, I think we're searching for an identity and what can bring us together. We seem to be so torn apart by race and class. So I think this conference will maybe provide some answers, I hope, to that.
This is Steve. The conference hopes to simulate conversations honoring these ancestral connections that we all have and to these landscapes of our past and present, whether they be Native American, European, African, Asian, Latino, or elsewhere. And we're hoping that this will lead to dialogue between generations and cultures to help us reconnect a place and restore a balance to Mother Earth. We have 50 millennials coming to the conference. On scholarship. And these are a combination of some students, but mostly these are activists in the social justice and environmental movement here in Northern California. And I think their presence is going to offer a great deal to the conference. We've asked each of the attendees to bring an ancestor with them. We're asking them to bring a photograph and a short story of some ancestor that had some intimate relationship with the land. I'm bringing my grandmother, Bella Fernandez, who is a Portuguese Azorean who was born in Hilo, Hawaii, on the Big Island, and her family worked in the sugarcane fields there for close to 14 years, and then they came to the mainland and ended up working in the cherry orchards in San Leandro, where both Bing and I grew up. And it was curious, I was talking to my son the other evening, and as it turns out, the house that my parents bought, this track house in 1947, were actually on the fields in which my grandmother and her family likely were caring for those sort of orchards. And so that's San Leandro is in many ways my ancestral land.
Wow.
Interesting, interesting. My own background is Chinese. I'm from the Pearl River Delta near Hong Kong. My father immigrated here to the States in 1916, and his father put him on a boat when he was 16 years old. My father left me a short autobiography about our family history. He tells the story about his father, my grandfather, who came over earlier, before the end of the century, maybe around 1880 or 90, and opened a restaurant in Stockton, California. But he was able to make some money, and he went back to the family village and built a house. And that's all I know about him. So that's a shadow story that I wish I knew more about. Eleanor, tell us a little bit about your ethnic background.
Well, all my grandparents migrated from Greece. So my parents were first-generation Americans. And the ancestry I know of is Greek on both sides, although there's one Italian, I believe, great-grandparent. But it would be very interesting. In fact, I was curious whether Lorette had an opinion about, I'd be interested in having a genetic study done, because I think I would find much more variety in my ancestry than I know of.
Let's pick this up after the break. This is KWMR, Community Radio for West Marin. And this conference, this station is underwritten by the 2017 Geography of Hope Conference.
Yay!
The theme this year is Ancestors and the Land, Our Past, Present, and Future, on March 17th, 18th, and 19th in Point Reyes Station, featuring field trips and discussions with writers and activists about ancestry, culture, community, land, food, and immigration, presented by Black Mountain Circle, as one of the co-hosts. Tickets online at gohconference.org. Postcarbon Radio with Bing Gong and Eleanor Despina, your co-host. And today's program is the 2017 Geography of Hope Conference. We're here with Steve Costa in the studio and presenters Lorette Savoy and Wendy Johnson. Wendy, let's pick up. What is your ethnic background?
I have to say, you know, I don't know as much as I should, but I certainly come from Northern European roots. There's no doubt about it. And at the conference, I will bring my great-grandmother, Sally B. Comer Lathrop, who lived as the daughter of the governor of Alabama in the early part of the 20th century. And there's a lot of shame and story involved in my beloved great-grandmother. So it will be an honor to bring great-grandmother to the conference, and to unfold and learn. I always learn so much at these conferences, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity.
Let me just pick up the question that I had before the break about the research that people can do now into their own backgrounds. Lorette, have you thought about it or investigated it at all?
You mean as far as doing DNA research?
Yeah, cheek swab, I think it is.
23andMe.
I have done that, and I've done that through various organizations, including the National Geographic Genome Project, as well as Ancestry.com and others. And one thing that I did find is that the results are not consistent.
Uh-huh.
And it may be partly because of margin of error, partly because of the nature, the state of the science in doing it. But there were some broad categories that did appear in all, and it might be worth trying it if you're willing to take a shot.
My daughter is doing it right now. She just had a very funny test that showed that she was part Asian, but the only Asian in my family is her stepfather, so we're having fun with that one. Oh, gosh.
Well, in some cases, you also might be seeing the pathways that deep ancestors pass through time, through migration routes. So it depends on what type of test it was, but it may be providing information that's worth considering.
I know, fun. And so now she wants to have a DNA test.
You know, I think that this will be something, when we listen to the presenters and to each other at the conference, this is Wendy speaking, I think that it behooves us to be prepared, because I believe, I know just listening to everything I've heard this afternoon, there is a real interest, and I think folks will ask, what is a reliable way to begin doing this testing? So, good to be talking about it now.
Yeah, it sounds like it's may not be reliable yet, but it's interesting that there are certain, that Lorette, you found certain overlaps among the tests.
Overlaps for Northern Europe, particularly Great Britain and Ireland, the British Isles, what are now the British Isles, Ireland and English ancestry, but also ancestry from West Africa and also Native ancestry. And it really is dependent on which tests that I look at. But all of that in some ways doesn't really get to the heart of what, at least for me, is more important. What were the lives of these people? How did they navigate through their lives in relationship to each other, but also in relationship to the land that was the basis for them, for their home? Because I think if we want to think about fostering healthier relationships with the land, with each other, we really have to understand what the past was of those who preceded us. And that is something that I really, really want to know. And the ancestral narratives there are really the shadow stories. And they're in pieces.
And so many, Bing and I were talking about this last night, how these stories really are lost because we're almost all immigrants here. I only know stories back to my grandparents, and after that, those stories of my ancestors' lives in Greece, what they were like, were they farmers, were they urban, I don't know any of that. And I think that's the American story. And is this partly why Americans are really kind of rootless? And does it in any way, do you think, both of you, I'd be interested to know, does this relate to this phobia that we seem to have in this country right now toward strangers and toward immigrants? I mean, how does our rootlessness connect with, why don't we just see that we're we all came here either long ago or not very long ago, and it's not very different from the people who are coming right now?
Well, yeah. Go, Lorette.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
You know, what occurs to me, what has always been so valuable about the Geography of Hope Conference is the ability and encouragement to listen. And I feel that particularly now, I mean, as always, though, it is so essentially important to slow down, to settle, to unarm a bit, to disarm, and to really listen to each other and to the stories that are coming, because so much is conveyed by story, known story, memory. I love the title of the book, Trace, Memory, History, Race, and the American landscape. That can we listen to those stories, spoken and unspoken, and remember who we are? We move so fast; it's so difficult to actually slow down enough to ask and to listen.
I think you're right, Wendy. And if you could think about it, you could think about what the purposes of some stories are, stories that groups of people give priority to or privilege to. They're often stories about who they are, where they came from, and what's most valuable to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so as people sort and arrange and discern patterns of experience through time, they put it into a form of public memory that then is narrated over time. But to give significance to some events, they build these narratives of the past and their lives, but these narratives depend on forgetting, or that is, silencing, suppressing, or rejecting elements that may be contrary to what a group wants to think or believe.
Right.
And so you could think of them almost like inconvenient truths. So for some social memories or historical narratives, especially ones about the origin of this nation, for some of them to be prominent and privileged really requires the silencing or amnesia of others. And these are often the discordant experiences of people who have been defined as other. And so I would add to that, that some of the key things that we're facing right now and that we've always faced is that interaction between ignorance of what another person is versus what you think they are, the interaction of ignorance, and then the fear that that ignorance can breed, because we don't want them there, that they may do something, and the level of power then that can allow some people then to segregate ideas, segregate memory, and also segregate people. So I really agree with you in wishing that it could be different, that we're all immigrants, but it's too sensitive and too important for some people to not believe that.
I'm thinking about the movement right now for gay, lesbian, transgender rights, and how as soon as there was this moment of acceptance of gay marriage and so forth, and so many people were able to speak openly, and it really it brought acceptance to a new level very quickly.
Right.
Do you see an analogy, potentially?
I do, and that's a really great example. And I'm thinking also of the political landscape right now, where it seems that public acknowledgement or acceptance is being threatened.
Yeah, it's threatening and it's being threatened.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful way to put it.
And so interesting, because once, as a society, we've been able to bring these issues out of the closet, how easy or hard will it be to push them back in?
I think that's something we're going to find out very soon. I know that I'm among countless people who are fighting against pushing anything that has become open, that allows us to know each other and to be in relation with each other. But it seems that there are many movements afoot that are trying to not just threaten it, but to close off conversation.
And the clothing, the dresses and cloaks and trousers and shoes in that closet no longer fit, and they have to fit for years.
You're right.
So we're coming out whole, as my friend Katriana Reed wrote years ago. She wrote, "Now I'm coming out whole, and may my whole self be invited to this conversation. May I come with my whole self to this conversation." And I think in this way it's going to be very powerful, Stephen, and I'm quite happy that we've been able to invite and give financial support to the wonderful young activists from the community to hear, because their tolerance and knowledge and information and ancestral lineage or story is very different, and they've grown up in very different ways. At least that's my experience, having the privilege of being able to work with younger students and learn together. So I'm really happy we'll have 50 young scholars with us.
One of the underlining questions that was mentioned earlier is for the conference is, what kind of ancestor do we want to be? And I think besides the immigration issues that we just spoke about, clearly this is a time of major threats to clean water, air, our parks, forests, wetlands. There is a piece I read yesterday with regard to these new EPA regulations regard to wetlands that are going to be announced this coming week, protecting our farmland. So clearly, we're going to be called upon again and again to protect this fragile ecology of ours in the coming months and years. And I really strongly believe that our ancestors and the land hold important sources of guidance, of hope, of resilience, And as we face these challenging times, so these future stories, those that will be told about us by our descendants, will depend, I think, in large part on our actions today.
Steve, could you also give our listeners a preview of the Geography of Hope panels?
Sure. As mentioned, we have these field trips on Friday, and I should mention that we've now opened up the field trips to individuals who would just like to go on the field trips. And the field trips are, again, found at gohconference.org. There's some trips that really explore local ancestors and local landscapes that I'd encourage you to consider and the listeners to consider. Then on Friday evening, we have these welcoming remarks from Joanne Campbell, who's an elder with the Graton Rancheria, Greg Saris and Drew Dillinger, great sort of teachers. And then Constance Washburn, who is a protege of Joanna Macy, who's going to lead us through an ancestor to get through an exercise to get in touch with our ancestors. And then on Saturday morning, Winona LaDuke is providing a keynote address, and then we have these three panels through the day. The first focusing on catching up with the past, with Lorette, Celia Rodriguez, a Latina from Berkeley, Brooke Williams, who's written this wonderful new book on his ancestors in Utah and is the husband of Terry Tempest Williams. This is being moderated by Melissa Nelson. That morning, Becoming Native to a Place is the focus of the present, with Nikki Finney, who's an African-American poet, writer. Lila June Johnson from New Mexico, young person who's been writing on these themes. Alarian Merkloof, who's a native person from Alaska, and this is being moderated by Brooke Hecht, who's with the Center for Humans and Nature. And then the last panel, What Kind of Ancestor Do We Want to Be? This is going to include Drew Dillinger, Winona, and Melissa Nelson. She's going to be a panelist on that session as well. And then the evening, we have a number of some spoken word, and we have great, delicious food. About Friday evening at Toby's Feed Barn, the sort of opening reception, and we move up to Westmoreland School, where most of or all of the Saturday sessions will be taking place besides the Friday evening.
Steve, can people still sign up?
They can. Registrations are available. There is a full weekend registration, and then there is a Saturday only. And as I mentioned, for $30, if you'd like to join us in one of the field trips on Friday, you can sign up again at gohconference.org.
I'd like to go back to Lorette. I found the story about your father and his book very interesting. Could you tell us a little bit about Alien Land, the book that he wrote in 1949?
Well, I guess this is another story of an ancestor about whom I knew little, another example of their pervasive silence. My father was a serious writer at one point that is getting published by a prominent press, and had a second novel drafted and another one in the works. It was truly as if I had met someone for the first time and that we shared so much together. And I never knew that as a child growing up. So to learn about Alien Land by finding it in the college stacks, and then later on to find a box with the materials for other writings, including this manuscript for an artist fighting segregation in Washington, D.C. and considering communism as a possible answer, was not just informative, but it gave me a sense of the the political side of my father, of his strong sense of justice and morality, and of his anger against an American government that he thought promoted one thing yet actually lived another. So it was life-affirming, but it was also very bittersweet because I could not talk with him. I found all these years after he died. And one thing I could add is that I have often wondered how much an unspoken hunger or need of a parent can touch a child, even marking a path for her to follow. And I think this case, even though I didn't know it when he was alive, I think his passion and his hunger did touch me and has pushed me to writing as well.
And again, it's in your DNA.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I do think it is. Mm-hmm. So we have faced that multiple times in the past, the barriers that are set up by one group to limit or exclude another. And I think part of the work that I hope we can do with our shadow stories, even the little fragments that we have, is to see how we can use them to be in conversation with other people so that they can understand how much we share in these multiple American stories. And from that sharing, maybe be in a more deeper relationship moving forward. At least that's my hope.
You describe your final session, Wendy?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did, but okay. I think it's lovely to follow what Steve has just lined out. Mm-hmm. You know, we have an opportunity for a conversation to really hear from four panelists speaking, beginning with Joanne Campbell and then Larry and Larry, Sylvie Minot and Celia Rodriguez speaking, each of them speaking about their experience of ancestral connection. What I think will be lovely about...
We can hear you, Wendy.
Okay, beautiful. What I think will be beautiful about the Sunday panel is that we'll begin indoors in the Dance Palace and then we'll weave outdoors and be absorbed into the Point Reyes landscape, going down into the wetlands to close the conference. So that's always a wonderful opportunity. And in years past, we've had driving rain or hurricane winds. So we'll see what happens this Sunday. But hopefully we'll be able, wind, rain, or hail, no matter what, we'll be able to go outside and listen to the land.
So the Sunday session is at the Dance Palace.
That's right.
Begins at the Dance Palace and then weaves out from the Dance Palace by foot, going down into the wetlands.
Are people able to attend just Sunday, Steve?
Not.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
Thank you.
I wanted to mention, it takes a village to put a conference like this together. And I just wanted to acknowledge the fact that we've had this incredible conference team led by Suzanne DeConi, who's been the conference coordinator. Elizabeth Patak has been doing an amazing job at getting the publicity out to the world. Kamala Tully worked with me in putting together the program. Constant Washburn did all the field trip coordination. Many of you might recall Constance was at MALT for many years doing all the field trips and more there. And Kristen McDonald is a volunteer who's been coordinating the scholarship. We got, I think, over 100 requests for scholarships, and we could only afford to accept 50. And so and they're going to be housed up at St. Columba's Retreat Center, at least most of them. So thanks to St. Columba's. We have over 50 volunteers that are working the weekend. We have lodging hosts, including Bing and Eleanor here. There are 15, 16 people that have opened up their homes or their cottages and houses that are lodging the presenters. And And I also want to mention this amazing exhibit at Toby's that Kitty Whitman has put together with a group of local artists that really explores the social history of ancestors in West Marin and is combined with some wonderful contemporary art by local artists. And I'd encourage that exhibit will be up at Toby's through the end of the month. So, there's probably another 150 people that have some way or another had their hand in making this conference and past conferences possible. And we are deeply grateful for that great energy.
And Steve, what is the website?
GOHconference.org. Again, registrations are available for the entire weekend or for Saturday only, and then these individual field trips.
You can learn about the schedule and about the
all the details are there speakers. At the website. Yes,
yeah.
Right.
So
I do think it's important. I'm just wanting to acknowledge the work of Steve Costa and Kate Levinson, and also our beloved new owners of the Point Reyes Bookstore, and how much it means for the community for this relationship to continue to evolve and to exhibit true ancestral knowledge. So it's wonderful. Right back at you, Steve. Thank you for all the huge amount of work you've put in.
Thanks,
Wendy. Organizing this.
Before we wrap up, I just want to let our listeners know that if you'd like to learn more about Laurette Savoy's work, you can go to her website. It's www.laurettesavoy.com. That's LAURETSAVOY, laurettesavoy.com. And she has a great blog there. And Wendy, where can people find out about your book?
I think also, going... there is a website, Gardening at the Dragon's Gate, but mainly the best way to find out about books is in the heart of a bookstore. So I think a huge part of this conference will be the opportunity to browse and immerse in the minds of the thinkers and writers and teachers and learners who are present for the conference. So there'll be a huge table with all of the books there. So interdependence in action at this conference. And I'm assuming we can purchase Laurette's books at that time, right?
Yes, yes. As with all the presenters.
All the presenters. So that's great.
I should also mention that all these presenters come. We provide them transportation. But over these past six conferences, there hasn't been any honorariums offered to these presenters. So they come with their wonderful knowledge and experience and share it with us at really no cost. And that, too, I have a great appreciation for. There are two people I skipped that I wanted to at least acknowledge, and that is Rosie Kaufman, who's the volunteer coordinator, and Christina Waldeck, who's the hospitality coordinator, who arranges for all the homes and hospitality for the presenters while they're here.
Well, I think that does it for today for Post Carbon Radio. I'd like to thank my co-host, Eleanor Despina. Thank you, Eleanor. And Steve Costa for joining us, on, as well as the presenters at Laurette Savoy, who we lost, unfortunately, but and Wendy Johnson. Thank you, Wendy, for joining us today. Yeah, and stay tuned now for Rick Clark, Cruising with Rick Clark. And for Post Carbon Radio, you can listen to all our archived programs at wmpostcarbon.com.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy.
Bye, Wendy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Climate's on my mind, the 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 climate's on my mind.
The most abundant greenhouse gas is carbon dioxide, beats a methane, nitrous oxide, and the F gases by landslide. Everyone releases it when they drive, unless you have an electric ride. It's almost 400 parts per million, and the main reason for climate's rise. Deforestation makes it worse when the trees decay. CO2 dispersed, also dead trees can't breathe it in. Makes it hard to cut back our emissions. Temperature is on the rise. All other animals can blame us because we are where the fault lies, and it's coming back to maim us. The rising climate poses many problems to the human race. Extreme weather like Katrina and Haiyan, we'll have to embrace. The glaciers are melting, and the sea level's rising at a fast pace. People living on the coast are going to be displaced. Certain species extinct, less water to drink. Other areas too wet, floods a big threat. Other areas dry out, susceptible to drought. Agriculture hit hard, coral reefs will be marred.
We have waited too long. Situation's tough, but stay strong until
we see the dawn.
The climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind.